there's probably some things that could be done a little bit more to basically take coaches that are minority coaches and put them in a position to provide them some more education, not just with regards to the game and how to coach the game, but with regards to how to navigate the industry.
It triggers down from the bottom up, and you have to get the interest of young athletes to get interested in baseball, but how do we get there? And bottom line is that we have to have a goal. What is the ultimate goal? From there, you develop a plan on how we're going to get there. Yes, we are making strides. How do we get to the national level? How do we get to the national stage?
I think we are headed in the right direction, and I think there are some initiatives out there, some people out there. It is going to take time, but I do feel we are headed in a positive direction. I think the first thing is just acknowledging that hey, we do have a little bit of a gap here, and I take it upon myself to make sure that, hey, you know, are you either part of the problem or you're helping solving it.
That's right.
So I think that is... you know, what we all need to do is just continue to see how we can help individually to help close that gap.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, your baseball coaching source for certified audio gold and the place where you come to connect with the very best baseball minds in our game. Has it already been a week? I mean, we might have to figure out how to get these out like twice a week, maybe. There are so many terrific coaches and guests, great topics, and more off-the-charts content that we want to get out to you guys. But for right now, let's just meet weekly inside your earbuds, and we appreciate each of you staying dialed into the show. Now, a few notes before we open up this week's episode. First, we want to make sure that you are following the three rules of podcasting: subscribe, review, and share. We just want to make sure that you and others around you, you've tapped that subscribe button on your phone, your tablets, your computers. And if you're on my same wavelength, visit your local Walmart or your AT&T, your Verizon store. Subscribe all those phones. I mean, go the extra mile if you really want to spread the word. I mean, somebody buys a new phone, and would you look at that? They got audio gold already waiting for them. That's the gift that just keeps on giving. Plus, leave us a review on there. 5-star ratings are wonderful, but the review is what helps more coaches find our show. And finally, share it with anyone and everyone you think might be interested in this podcast, whether it's coaches or players or parents, anyone that's actively looking for personal growth. Send them to wherever podcasts are free or at abca.org/podcast so they can find our show. Also, as many of you know, this podcast is supported and sponsored by our great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. And if you're listening in and maybe dreaming of what AstroTurf could do for your facility, maybe redo that surface, add in that no-mow, no-grow, no H2O solution to your park, head over to astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. Check out what these folks have done for Vanderbilt and Tulane and so many others around the country that took their field to brand new levels. And you'll find out for yourself why AstroTurf has been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. Now with this podcast, we love getting into BP groups with you, inside bullpen schedules. We'll take some extra GBs, and we love breaking down the ins and outs of baseball fundamentals. And more of those are coming, guys, no worries. But there are also times to step away from the dugout and see the big picture. Use this platform to open up some eyes, maybe get to the masses with some thought-provoking shows. Like episode 40, we connected with three former baseball coaches turned athletic directors. That was a powerful show. We're also breaking down the grassroots efforts to grow baseball in our communities as recent as a few weeks ago. We touched base with Coach Whitting on episode 53, seeing how the city of Houston was recovering from the devastating effects of Hurricane Harvey. Well, this show dives even deeper to help spark awareness and attention to minority relations and diversity across all levels of baseball. We connect with Northwestern University's Spencer Allen, Southern University's Carrick Jackson, and Florida International University's Mervil Melendez, and we welcome all three head coaches to our show to unpack their perspective on the current state of the game. Like where Spencer dropped at the beginning of the show, we're either part of the problem or we are part of the solution. And we open up solutions and action items that each of us can be aware of and work towards addressing minority inclusion in baseball. And more than that, keep this conversation alive and thriving, so we all see the full scope of initiatives such as MLB's RBI program, or gets us thinking creatively to truly impact positive change. And we are beyond appreciative of Carrick and Spencer and Merville's time, efforts, and perspective they offered on this show. So thanks again, fellas, for that. So let's go ahead and dive into it. Let's welcome in Northwestern Spencer Allen, Southern's Carrick Jackson, and FIU's Merville Melendez, all loyal members of the ABCA and all part of the solution, as we spotlight diversity in our dugout on this week's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Get ready, coaches, because this great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. What a terrific episode we've got on deck with three great baseball men. But more importantly, there's a real thought-provoking episode that's getting ready to unfold, and we're excited. We're not going to waste any more time. We're going to dive right into it. And I want to welcome in our three guests. First, the head coach at Northwestern University, Spencer Allen. Spence, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sheets. Great to be here.
Awesome. We're excited to have you. We've also got the head coach at Southern University, Carrick Jackson. Carrick, thanks for jumping on with us.
Appreciate it, Sheets.
And all the way down in the great state of Florida, at Florida International University, Merville Melendez. Coach Melendez, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate all three of you guys making time in the middle of your season to jump on this call. And like we've discussed in prep for this show, I think the timing of the release of this is hopefully significant. We're at the end of Black History Month, end of February. Well, we want this conversation to carry over, not just into March, into the coming months and hopefully the coming years, as we all work through this show to talk through a myriad of topics that lead us towards solutions and action items that gets everyone on the same page on how we can truly grow baseball. And again, we're excited to have you three on the show. But what I want to start this is give our listener a place that they can know where you're coming from, so just an even playing field. And I want to talk first of all to Spencer. Can you just take us through your career path in baseball that led you to becoming the head coach there at Northwestern?
My playing career, I played at Iowa State University, and actually in 2001 they dropped the program. Mm-hmm. I was planning on being the volunteer coach. As I found out, I was not good enough to play anymore. I just loved the game and wanted to stay in it. And So I got my first, I guess, probably big break as a full time assistant at Creighton University. 1 year as a scout with Detroit Tigers, which was a great experience for me. And then I bounced really all over Purdue, Washington State, back to Creighton, Illinois, and then was lucky enough to be named the head coach here at Northwestern. And I'm just going on my third year.
Love it. Love it. Carrick, same question, man. Just take us through your career path in baseball that led you to become the head coach there at Southern.
Yeah, for sure. I played junior college baseball at Merrimack. It's now called St. Louis Community College. Played there under a storied coach there that had been there for 27 years, and then went on to Bethune-Cookman. And actually, Merville and I were teammates there and won the first conference championship in the school's history, and then transferred and graduated and finished up at the University of Nebraska. And then from there, I got a high school job right out of college when I got done and graduated. And my first college job was at Fairfield University there in Connecticut. And similar to Spencer, I bounced around junior colleges, coached at Coffeyville Community College, coached at Emporia State, which is a V2 as a grad assistant there, Jeffco in St. Louis. Nickel State, another Division I school here in Louisiana. Then I spent 3 years as a Midwest area scout and supervisor for the Washington Nationals. I was at Missouri from 2010 to 2015. Took some time away a little bit and was an agent with Boris Corporation. And then was fortunate enough to get a call and get this job here as a head coach here at Southern University.
That's great. Merville, last but certainly not least, man, let's take us through your career path that led you to the head coach there at FIU.
Absolutely. Well, I started playing just like Carrick said, at a junior college as well, in Valencia in Orlando. From there, I moved on to Bethune-Cookman, in which, as Carrick said, we won a championship in 1996, the first in school history. From there, believe it or not, when I finished playing, I became an assistant coach right off the bat at 22. So graduated, became an assistant at 22. From 22 to 25, I was the assistant coach at Bethune. At the age of 25, I was named the head baseball coach at my alma mater, in which I led them for 12 years. I was the head coach there. And then after that, received an offer to go to Alabama State. And of course, I think the baseball community thought that I was crazy just taking a program that had not had any history.
Yeah.
And we did, and took it for 5 years, took it into a SWAC kind of perennial top two team in the conference. And then from there, after 5 years, I moved on to Florida International University, in which I have served as a head coach here for 2 years. So yeah, about a 20-year career, 3 as an assistant and 17 as a head coach.
How about that? Now, we're not going to move on with this podcast until we get to the bottom of, between Carrick and Merville, who's the better player?
Hands down, it was Merville. No question.
Very kind of you, Carrick.
So you're not going to deny that, Merville? It was you?
You know what? Carrick was mainly a pitcher. So it's a different trait that you have as a pitcher and of course as a position player. But I think we both possess the ability to help a team win, which is the ultimate goal.
There it is, 100%. Well, Spencer, I'm not even going to debate. You were the much better player than me, so we all know where we rank on this podcast. So let's dive into the topics we want to get into today. And again, from a perspective of what can come from this show, we really want to spend some time talking about the minority relationship inside of baseball. And I have to, and I got to give credit to Pete Flores with the Rake City Group organization out in Chicago. Known Pete for a long time. Pete hit me with this a few months ago and really challenged me to start thinking a little bit differently. And to be honest with me, gave me the courage to really get this out in a podcast form. We're talking about guys that are listening to the show. We've got tens of thousands of coaches from youth to high school to travel baseball, college baseball, professional baseball that pay attention to this show. And so what a terrific opportunity and platform to really speak from and dive into the topics that we're going to get into today. And Carrick, I want you to kick this first question off. And I just want you to, if you could, elaborate on what you see as the current climate across all levels of baseball throughout coaching in relation to really inclusion and participation for minorities.
You know, I think that there's being some efforts that are being made to have that inclusion, specifically with the players. I think on the coaches' side of it, I think that there's probably some things that could be done a little bit more to basically take coaches that are minority coaches and put them in a position to provide them some more education, not just with regards to the game and how to coach the game, but with regards to how to navigate the industry. And I think with when it comes to baseball, we're a little bit different than football and basketball because you have that direct playing experience and it rolls right over into coaching experience. We have a small minority, if you will, playing the game. And so those opportunities to roll right in from playing coaching don't exist. And you have to have the right individual, and you have to be in the right scenario and surroundings to do that. As each one of these guys has talked about their experiences, we were in the right place at the right time that allowed us to have those opportunities. And if you're not in that right place at that right time, it's tough. And so I think there's some efforts made on the playing side. We talk about it a lot in regards to how do we incorporate more minority participation in the game playing wise. Yeah. But I think we also have to look at it and say, how do we incorporate more coaching opportunities? Because similar to some of the other sports, there may be more kids attracted to playing if they're looking at coaches that look more like them and believe that those coaches may understand where it is that they're coming from and some of the experiences that they had. It may lend to more participation on the playing side.
Terrific points, and obviously we're going to get to some action items and solutions to your points as we get into the show. Merville, same type question, man. What's the current climate that you see in baseball, especially playing, but also into coaching as well?
Well, I'm going to echo what Carrick said, and it goes back to the coaching aspect of it. If we look at the landscape of, and let's just say in our sport, in college baseball, the minority participation in the college coaching community is it's not as great, whether it's because of the interest or whether it's because of just a tradition part of college baseball. It's just, you know, the minority coaches around in major universities, it's not a great percentage. So part of the problem is that, you know, when we translate that into, well, how does that translate into the other part of baseball, which is professional baseball? Well, it triggers down from the bottom up, and you have to get the interest of young athletes to get interested in baseball. But how do we get there? And that's been a problem since 1996, when I became an assistant coach. I've answered questions from different angles, and the bottom line is that we have to have a goal. What is the ultimate goal? From there, you develop a plan on how we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are making strides. Yes, the urban academies have been in place, and they're in different cities right now, but that's still regionalized. How do we get to the national level? How do we get to the national stage in which we are making tournaments for the minorities? You know, just like Perfect Game or the other organizations are making the national tournaments. How do we incorporate that into the minority? So I think the best step to follow would be making those tournaments. Make sure that the inner cities are participating in every single tournament that they are. That we get. We get the kids that need to play, need to step away a little bit from football and basketball and enjoy the sport, because when they do, they become phenomenal players, and many of them become Hall of Famers at the end of the day.
That's really good. Spencer, is there any more meat on the bone left with you with this question, just in relation to the current climate, but also just we're looking at inclusion and participation? Where do you see it?
Yeah, you know, I think what Merville hit on right there, and I think the one thing that baseball has to offer is there are a lot more levels, and there's a lot more opportunities to play. You know, I played at a junior college, and I mean, you have everything from NAIA, D1, D2. There's just a lot of levels to play with baseball, and to me, that equates to a lot of opportunities that I think we are headed in the right direction, and I think there are definitely some initiatives out there, some people out there. It is going to take time. But I do feel we're headed in a positive direction. I think the first thing is just acknowledging that, hey, we do have a little bit of a gap here. And I think now, it's up to, you know, I take it upon myself to make sure that, hey, you know, are you either part of the problem, or your help solving it.
That's right.
And so I think that is, you know, what we all need to do is just continue to see how we can help individually to, you know, help close that gap.
Love it. Love it. And let's kind of keep cracking the shell. Let's keep diving in a little bit deeper. Merville, I want you to kick this one off, man. We're talking about obstacles that are out there. What are they? And then how do we move past them? And I know we can talk about travel baseball, which I know we will, but just what you see as maybe some of the obstacles that we need to be aware of, we need to figure out solutions to jump over those hurdles.
Well, the first obstacle, and this has been an obstacle for now for a few decades since I've been coaching, is, you know, baseball takes so much to be able to participate in, which the other sports don't take as much in football and basketball. But,
right.
But it's just providing the equipment, providing the tools, for the kids to be successful, and not just at a young age. I mean, we get confused of, okay, let's just give them bats and baseballs and gloves, and let's get them out there and let's get them interested to play. But what do you do throughout their careers to continue that trend? If I have to invest too much money into the sport, which this is probably the only sport that demands so much money between equipment and travel ball and traveling and playing in different tournaments, and we're not able to provide those for those that are in need, we're going to be in trouble. Our sport is not only a slower paced sport compared to basketball and football, but you're also running the challenges of how do players get the equipment that they need, and how do they participate, how do they travel around And it all takes money. It all takes someone to step up and say, this is the way we're going to do it. This is a model. And we're doing it not just for those that are going to participate in the big leagues. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
We're doing it for society as a whole. We're doing it so they understand that there's something, and it's a trickle-down effect, there's something that they can get involved in that is going to involve teamwork, is going to involve them to be responsible, to become really good in society, and then it trickles down to their kids, it trickles down to their grandkids and such, and overall, you know, at the end of the day, what we want is really good citizens.
Yeah, that's a period. That's an outstanding point. Spencer, anything to add to that?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, when you look at it, you know, I look at how I got involved in baseball, and I just happened to have, you know, my grandpa and my dad at a young age were big baseball fans, and so I think, again, when you're looking at how people get exposed to the game, I think that's important too, in understanding that, again, as we make our game a little bit more attractive, like Merle was hitting on with the pace of the game and some of those things, again, it does take time, you know, as we talked a little bit about the, you know, maybe the finances of it, but I'm just even looking at of you know, being introduced and attracted to the game, and as we get more involvement with minority players, and I think that is, again, going to trickle down to the younger players as their dads or their uncles or brothers are introducing it to them, and all of a sudden they do see the opportunity, and that's mm-hmm. the thing that, again, I'm with Merville on that, is this is not about, you know, turning guys into professional baseball. It's you know, like me, I mean, I might have made it through college, but baseball was definitely just a very big motivator, and, sure. and that's, you know, what I want to see, hopefully, for more minority players at the high school level.
And Carrick, I know you feel like tribal baseball is the least of these issues, and we were talking before we got recording, but can you just open up some obstacles that you see are out there, if there's anything that's left that hadn't been discussed?
Yeah, like you said, I do think that tribal ball is an issue, but if we go back and look, and I know it's on a smaller scale, but the travel of it is also greater. Look at AAU basketball. Mm-hmm. You got kids that are at 9 years old that are traveling all over the country. And for people that, and these kids don't get, they don't have the money either, but they have shoe companies that are sponsoring these teams. They have that booster who wants to see that team be successful. The other thing I think is a big obstacle for our sport is also, if you go and you look at a 9U JFL team, junior football league team, and you look at a 9U AAU basketball team, and you go look at a 9U baseball team, let's compare the level of coaching and knowledge base at those levels to those particular sports. And across the board, baseball is probably the least. The knowledge base in those other sports, when you go out and watch, and I had the advantage of my nephew playing and watching him play at that age at AAU basketball, man, they got it down. They know defenses, yeah. They know offensive plays, they know court, they got court awareness, they got all that stuff. You look at the football aspect, they know blocking schemes, they know reads, they're learning all those things. Well, in baseball, because we don't necessarily have guys that are really know the intricacies of the game, mm-hmm. and this is no disrespect to dads that are coaching, but then they're getting limited aspect and information to the game, which for us, when we have, you know, black kids or minority kids that are playing that have the ability to be successful in the game, because it is a game of the small details and not necessarily a game based on the idea of how good you are as an athlete, mm-hmm. if they don't know those things, then they're already on that path to failure in the game. And so then as they grow and they see their teammates that are kids that they grow up with that are having better success, then all of a sudden we walk away. I'm not good at that. I can't do that. I can't hit that ball. I can't field that ball. I can't throw that ball. Well, you learned this game at the same age, but what was your access to quality coaching that would allow you to go on and be successful as you move forward? So that's, for me, that's the biggest hurdle is, what are we doing to teach them at a young age to understand what this game is about? And as Mervell said, it's a game of failure. And so, me being completely honest, nobody likes to fail.
But specifically, when you look at minority groups and black folks in general, you're going to put these kids on a team where they're maybe in many instances the only black kid on that team, and they're not being as successful, they're going to walk away. They're going to go do something else because they know basketball, football, I can smoke all these guys in that sport. So I'm, you know what, I'm going to go over here and do this instead.
Yeah. And the failure is certainly not as rampant in basketball and football as it is in our game, as you pointed out. You know, 2 points that come to mind relative to this is, you know, we talk about travel baseball, especially when we're looking at inclusion or participation. And to your point, Carrick, there's not enough practice time either. That's a concern as well. As we look at travel baseball and it's we're advertising 80, 90, 100 games, that's great. But we all know how important practice is. And from where the travel baseball end, there's so many organizations that are making that adjustment and really including more practice time into their schedules. Another concern, and actually, like I mentioned, Pete Flores earlier, Pete gave this to me. He goes, the one thing they would worry about with travel baseball is that with these tournaments, a lot of the times they're staying in hotel rooms and the bills that pile up over a weekend, it feels like it's stay to play. And that's the part where if you could, he goes, if I could really figure out how to take a day of hotel rooms away, I could probably over the course of a summer, I could scholarship a kid or two based on that money saved. And so again, there's just concerns that I think are coming up and arising that people are looking at that they can adjust, whether it's practice time or adjusting their schedules to make sure that we're not outpricing players and their participation in the sport. Let's go into this, and this is gets a little touchy, but I really want this to be as raw and as intimate as you guys really want to take it. And Spencer, I want you to kick this question off. What are some of the challenges that you face personally in this game, whether as a player, as a coach, as you've moved your way up to becoming a head coach, and how'd you overcome those?
Well, I think that number one is just the no one really in the room like you, you know, and, yeah. And I think there's always going to be tough days. Right. And sometimes, that can just be another thing that adds to it. I do have to say that I always had great coaches, and if there were ever any, awkward moments or you know, just any issues that came up, really, I think that the biggest thing that I would feel is if there was something maybe, in the newspaper that had happened socially, out in the world, I think a lot of times, even though you're with your teammates, there's just kind of that natural maybe division on something, and so I think those were more of the challenges that I had, and again I think I was lucky to have my mom and my dad that really just wanted me to try not to see color and just treat people as people. But I do think that there were times in my career that it was tough, but at the same time I think it's helped kind of where it mold me and get me to where I'm at today.
That's really good, man. Carrick, same question, man. Challenges you face personally, and then I'm very interested in how you overcame those.
I think initially I think it's just the idea of respect for what my place was in the game. Mm-hmm. I think that so I was raised by my grandparents because my parents were juniors in high school when I was born. And so my grandfather was a minister and my grandmother, just your typical grandmother. She was about, 4 foot nothing. But she was the one that carried that big stick.
Yeah.
So they raised me with the idea of wherever you go, make sure people respect you as a man. And so I think people respected me as the person that I was because I went about my business the right way, but I think it was working my way to get that respect with regards to the game and what my place was in the game. And going through that, I think it was just me putting my nose to the grindstone and just working and people constantly seeing me out somewhere, recruiting guys and man, what are you doing here? Like, how did you get all the way over here? Man, I wouldn't expect you to see you in this place. And how did you know about this guy? And I tell my young assistants that I have right now, not everybody wants to hear your opinions. And so for me, when I first started, I didn't say a lot. I just worked. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I think started to say, hey, well, what do you think about this? And, and so then as that went, I think the respect grew for what my place was in the game. And so it wasn't something that was directly in my face, but you knew it was there. And I think these guys are kind of in the same spot with me as well, as you see guys that get jobs and you wonder, how did he get that job and why wouldn't I be in consideration for that? But then the reality hits, oh, well, I'm not in that circle that he's in. I don't have that same level of backing that he does. And so I think once you got to that point, then it changed the scope of the game and how people looked at me and my place in the game.
Merbell, same question, man. Challenges you face, how'd you overcome those?
Wow, you know, this is really a loaded question, and I like actually what Eric said and how he's carrying this conversation. And one thing that you said is be intimate, be candid, and go as hard as you can. Well,
that's it.
Mine is a little bit a little bit different. So when at HBCU, you know, playing there, like I said, with Eric, and then becoming a coach. Getting another job was very, very difficult. Just a perception of you're coaching at a low level. You're coaching at HBCU. Yeah, you've done a good job, but I don't think you'll be able to do the same job at a different university. It is baseball after all. That perception getting out. One thing that I was really, really happy, not only because I played with him, but because I knew that minority plays in Power 5 conferences is when Kerry got the job there. Mm-hmm. At Missouri, I was like, wow, this is one of the few. He is one of the few minorities that are in Power 5 and in Power 5 conference. And then he became a recruiting coordinator. Now, that's a big title. Mm-hmm. As we know, recruiting is a lifeline of every program, especially at the Power 5. He did a great job with me at Missouri. So that kind of gave me a little bit of hope. That there are some people that will give you that opportunity, but the challenges of moving into another university that is not traditionally a historically black college university has been very tough just because of the perception. I mean, and let's just be honest, let's be frank about this.
Right.
Look at the landscape of college baseball and coaching, and it's extremely, extremely difficult if you're not in that circle, which, you know, of course, I can't say that I am. Brian Reese, who coached me and Coach Carrick at Bethune, is not out of the game, but he's out of the college baseball ranks. He's a scout with the Yankees. So I don't have the network to go out and say I coach under him. I coach under him. He knows me very well. We have coached together at different places. Just don't have that. So it's taken me, you know, it took me about 17, 8 years to really get a chance to get out of, and not get out because I had a great, great career, but just to get an opportunity at a more traditional university. And that's that challenge, even though at times frustrating, as Kerrick said, why not me? Why am I not being considered? And I know the name has been circling around many times at many different big jobs, but really not, I don't think it was that serious. So little by little, you continue to fight through it. You continue to work through, through the kinks of college baseball. And, you know, there's only one person that is in control, and it's God, and he'll take new paths.
It's awesome. Thank you guys for doing that. I know that can be a tough question to answer, but, you know, we try to ask the tough questions on here. But more than that, I think there's some real growth that are inside those answers and some real perspective that we want to make sure we got out. Now let's get into some action items. This is where we were talking about earlier, being part of the problem or do you want to be part of the solution? And so we've got to talk about some action items that are creative ways we can introduce and keep more minority players playing baseball and then progressing in through the upper levels into high school and into college. Now, Kerrick, I want you to kick that off. You've already mentioned a few, but open that up, some action items, creative ways that you see from the lower levels working their way up that we can really introduce and keep more guys playing.
Well, I think, you know, kind of as I talked about before and you mentioned a little bit, the idea of educating coaches at those younger levels,
mm-hmm.
of how to go about things and even the idea that you brought up to us about having a committee, having a special some meetings at the ABCA, especially with as wide range as you guys have gotten now and how big that thing is. I think that's a huge start. I think the other idea is you kind of look at what, you know, Major League Baseball is doing with the Urban Youth Academies and putting some of those guys in places. I think them being able to tap into the HBCU programs that are out there and getting those kids in positions to make that opportunity for them there at those places, I think could be tremendous. When we talk about Major League Baseball and looking at ways to help college baseball, for me, one of those things could be the idea of, you know, basically how can we fund and help some of these HBCUs where these kids do have an opportunity to go and play. But then at the same time, setting some criteria that need to be met by those HBCUs in order to receive that level of funding.
Sure.
So not just get it just to be giving it and then saying, okay, here you go, here's what we're doing. No, here's some benchmarks that need to be met in order to get XYZ dollars. And once you meet those benchmarks, you get that money, you're attracting more of those kids, you're coaching those kids at a level that they need to be coached. And I think that can promote some more participation in the game across all levels. When you look at some of the bigger schools and those things now, you have to win. And so as much as those coaches would like to have more inclusion, if they're going to win without inclusion, they're going to win without inclusion. That's going to be their priority. It can't be. Their priority has to be get W's in order to keep their jobs. And now we're going into the landscape of where college baseball coaches, head coaches are getting paid seven figures. They're not going to be able to go to their AD and their boosters. Well, hey, you know what? Look what I did for these minority kids. That's not going to keep their jobs. So I think that there's coaches that will make those efforts if the players can help them win. But I think you have to look a little bit lower to some of these other places and say, okay, here's where we can help infuse some funds to make it more attractive for these kids to get there and provide the resources they need to participate. And I think that could help out tremendously.
That's great. Mervell, same question, man. Just action items, creative ways that maybe you've thought about for a while or ways that we can just really introduce and keep more guys playing and progressing in baseball. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. One of the topics of many, many meetings have been the increase in scholarship. And if we are going to compete against a sport such as football and basketball, where the recruiting aspect of it, when it's all said and done, basketball and football will be recruiting against baseball because of the scholarship money. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no way that we can compete and tell a kid, take your parcel here because we have 11.7 scholarships, mm-hmm. and reject the full ride that you have to play the other sports. It is very unfair in college baseball for us to be limited to 11.7 scholarships when we can have 35 players, when we need 10, 11 pitchers throughout the year to really have a good season and continue to progress in our sport. So part of the problem has been that, and there hasn't been a solution. And of course, by increasing the scholarship allotment doesn't necessarily mean that we are going to continue to attract the minorities to play the game, but it certainly opens the door. Second point would be HBCU funding. Most of the HBCUs, especially at the Division I level, they're not fully funded. They don't have 11.7.
Right.
So how do we help them to get up to par with every other university so that they can compete at a level playing field? And that has been a problem for years, and everybody once again have talked about, oh, let's do this, let's do that. Why don't we do something about it? Major League Baseball can get involved because it definitely benefits them a great deal to have a fully funded program in HBCUs. They have been many, many players that in the past have come out of HBCUs that have been great baseball players and have been great influence in the youth baseball as well. And the last point has to be how does Major League Baseball help with youth? So let's just go back to running tournaments. Let's just go back to let's just open it up, regardless of your financial status. let's just make kids play the game of baseball again, mm-hmm. where finances are not a roadblock, so that we are, this game is accessible to everyone that wants to play, regardless of where their background, where they come from. And it doesn't have to be an expensive ordeal for them to play and play on a regular basis. So I think that we need to, in all of sports, I think across America, there has been a pioneer. There has to be someone that doesn't care what the public says, doesn't care who's going to get upset, and goes out and says it like it is and continue to fight. So we're just looking for that pioneer to step up and say enough is enough. We are going to do this. You may not like me. I may be public enemy number one, but it needs to happen. It needs to be done for our minorities to continue to play the game. And, you know, this game may be extinct to them in 5-10 years if we don't do so.
Yeah. Well, to Carrick's point about coaching education, I think as you guys see in the coming months, we've got an educational initiative with USA Baseball that I think will really address that concern. And Merville, obviously you guys have seen what's come out of our meetings with MLB over the last couple of weeks, just really looking at their plan is to hopefully get involved and help fund scholarships. But I completely agree to fund it across every level and make the richer even richer. What you're bringing out of this, Merville, is that we should really target HBCUs or think about if we really want to help minorities inside of college baseball, we need to really address directly and make sure those funds are going to the appropriate spots. Now, Spencer, I know this is a really good point for you, man, because I know you know Kenny Fulman, who's on our travel baseball committee here at ABCA, Chicago White Sox ACE program. But I'm interested in just some creative ways that you're thinking, then obviously address what Kenny's doing there with the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I'm just so impressed with what the ACE program has done. And I think the biggest thing, you know, my point with this is, you know, they start, I believe it was 13, 14 years ago, okay, and you know, this takes time, but now I think we're starting to see, you know, with a Corey Ray, a first round draft pick, but more impressively, you know, if you go on a Wednesday night up to the Bulls Sox Academy, you'll see, I mean, hundreds, literally, you know, hundreds of, mm-hmm. of black players, you know, working and training. And I think Carrick talked about it a little bit earlier, but I really, really think that it has to be at the grassroots level. And then again, even more impressively is you'll see 6, 7, 8 coaches who are locked in, dialed in. And then you'll see a Corey Ray coming back and talking about what he learned at Louisville. That's where I think we're really going to start to see some excitement in kids going, hey, I want to do that. And maybe it's not at a Louisville, but I want to go play college baseball somewhere. And I think in 5 years, I just think we have to make a push that every city, every major league baseball city, right? Cause it my guess is it costs, you know, let's just say $500,000 with everything that the ACE program does, from, you know, getting kids to tournaments to the training that they do. Let's just say that's a drop in the bucket. And everyone knows that's something that can really just have a huge impact, you know, on all these players. And I just think every city, I think every team can do it. And I really, really think that if you could get that in place, if we could get that in place and make sure that it's not just about, oh, hey, here's the money. Now, you know, you have to have guys like Kenny and yeah. Kevin Coe and people that are organizing this at the grassroots level and then are carrying out that plan. And I just really think that could have a major impact.
That's a terrific point. Yeah, if you're really going to enact some serious change, a lot of times that is going to happen on a grassroots level. A couple of things that I thought maybe a listener or even you guys on the call could take this back is when I was growing up, and just like when you guys were, those hit, pitch, and throw competitions, those seemed to be more prevalent. Whether that was, in essence, for us, it was almost like a Little League tryout. So they just had it at our Little League field. You went out there and threw it, you hit it, and you did your stuff, and that's how they drafted Little League teams. But we always tried to get a lot of the kids in our class that we knew didn't play baseball, but we were in gym class with them, and we watched that kid throw, and we watched him hit a baseball, and we went, man, you should come to this. And that might be a way to include more guys, or at least, you know, like we talked about earlier, expose them to baseball. More youth clinics. I know that working a couple of MLB play ball initiatives – where they're just really a free, open clinic for youth players, a great way to expose them. But maybe we need to think about doing more youth clinics, especially in those neighborhoods, those communities, just like Kenny has, and really including more folks into that. Community events, whether that's around your games or that's inside what you do within your practice schedule, doing more that brings the community together. And another final point I'll make is, you know, our Baseball ACE program, which is a free 3-hour clinic that anyone can host. If you're a loyal ABCA member, you can host these events that, again, just gets more people onto your campus, but more importantly, it just brings the community together, just a way to educate coaches, and it all moves towards what we're going to announce this spring. Now, I want to go into coaching, because that's going to be the other part of this, is we've got to get more minorities into and staying in coaching. And like we alluded to earlier, they've got to play it to move up into coaching. And so we've got to work from that point and then move into keeping them involved in coaching. So I guess, Mervell, can you kick this one off? How do we get these guys more involved in coaching, keeping them in coaching, and obviously flourishing and having great careers like you guys have?
Well, I think it goes from the bottom up. And one of my mentors is Brian Reese. And in fact, I saw him last year, and I gave testimony of how he has helped my career, even though he coached me for 2 years, and I never actually coached under him. But a lot of the my philosophy that I carry on now is from him, for what I learned from him, where there's my bunt defense, first and third defense, the fly ball communication. It all stemmed from listening to him, how he taught the game of baseball. So it comes from the coaching that you have acquired through the ranks, through the grassroots and in college level. So I think that they will become better coaches if they are coached well. It is difficult to play baseball and not have the proper coaching and then become a coach and know all the X's and O's that you have to teach, the fundamental part of the game, which I think is the most important part of baseball. It's just a fundamental part of the game, how to properly catch the ball, how to properly throw a baseball so that you don't get hurt, how to train to be a baseball player. That is taking a back seat on coaching, on the coaching side. Even as we are not in charge of strength and conditioning nowadays, I sit down with a strength and conditioning coach and said, this is what I want to prevent one injury and to get the most out of the player. So it comes from the top all the way down. If you have good coaches and you're inspired to be like them, I think that will make you into a better coach and that will into a better player. And that will mean that when you want to get into coaching, you're going to do a pretty good job teaching the game as well. So it comes from the coaches that have taught you in the past.
That's good. Spencer, same question, man. What do you see from a coaching end?
Yeah, well, I think the good thing is I think that the interest is there. I'm seeing and talking with more and more, you know, specifically African-American guys that are wanting to get in the game. And I think a lot of that is you know, I was lucky to have different mentors in my career. And I think that it's a little bit upon us to talk more about the business. I think Carrick was kind of talking about it, but, you know, how to market yourself, how to make sure that I was the same way as Carrick is, you know, I just kind of wanted to shut up and just watch and learn. And sometimes it's right. You're learning, man. I don't want to act like that guy, you know, and then there's a lot of going, gosh, I just like how this guy carries himself. And, so I think that is a big piece of it. And then being, you know, having, resources, you know, guys, you know, like Carrick. And again, I remember I was like, Merle, I remember seeing Carrick at Missouri and the success that he had. And I just remember, you know, really kind of looking up to him, you know, and going, gosh, this is, you know, this is good stuff. And so I think more and more coaches do get opportunities, you know, you got Edwin Jackson, you just got a lot of guys that are out there doing good things and being good role models. You know, I think it's on us to make sure that we do take those guys under our wing a little bit and just be that role model, you know, for those guys.
That's great. Carrick, anything to add to that?
No, I agree with both those guys. I think it's being able to have
those mentors that you look up to. And it's Mervell and I have never had this conversation, but when we played together, he was that guy, right? Like he was the guy on the field that had baseball knowledge, that had people's respect because of how he went about the game. I'm coming from the Midwest down there. It's his wife now, but it was his girlfriend at the time. I remember them inviting me over and having dinner at their place. And just how he went about it. And like he said, he made that transition, from playing to coaching. That was kind of the kicking off point for me. One was playing for Coach Reese. Mm-hmm. Nobody did more with less than that guy, like nobody that I've ever been around. And it was never about what we didn't have. It was about, this is what we have, and we're going to be successful with what we have. And we're not going to make excuses because we don't have our own practice field. We're not going to make excuses because we don't have six different sets of uniforms. We're not. And if I remember correctly, I think we had like 26 guys on our roster that year. And I think there was maybe eight of us that were pitchers. And so that's one thing that I constantly go back to with my players, that I constantly go back to with coaches, is we made it work. Yeah. And we were coached up and we played the game well. But then when you had guys like Bell who were baseball guys that became that extension, then it made it even easier. And so being able to be in that type of environment and exposing those kids to that type of environment, just the things that have happened here with us, you know, in the last 6 months or whatever it is that I've been here, these kids are hungry to be coached. Mm-hmm. They are hungry for structure and discipline. So if we provide that for them, then I think we'll see success. And so it's the same thing. If we educate people that want to coach baseball, then I think you can get a better product at a younger age, and we can produce not only better players, but we in turn will produce better coaches that are more baseball savvy and that can move throughout this game.
It's outstanding. You know, I'm going to bring up just a couple more points. One is, again, our ACE community clinics that are, again, three-hour coaching clinics. That's a great way to start. Now, you guys are in terrific opportunities being in Chicago and Baton Rouge and Miami. You've got a chance to do some things inside those diverse communities. So, I mean, inviting those guys to practice and letting them see kind of what's going on there at Southern. How do we run practice here at FIU that can certainly work their way and educate them, but also, again, community events, things that are, and I'm certainly you guys are doing these things, but just community events, if you're out there listening, that you can do inside your community to really bring more people into what you're doing in your program. There's certainly, it's a win-win across every front. You guys have just opened up a number of different ideas and topics. We appreciate that. Now, a couple of things that have come up, and I know, Carrick, you brought this up, and something I want to make sure we got out on the show. Craig and I spoke before we recorded the show last week, and we were talking through a number of things of what we can do here at ABCA. And to Carrick's point, we will open up and start an ABCA Minority Relations Committee and you three as charter members, and we'll look to work together to really build that committee, build that group. Certainly a guy like Kenny Fulman would be included in that. And we just want to make sure we're getting the right guys that are interested in being part of the solution. And to, you know, Mervell's point, a way to be a mentor and a way to bring up different communities and different coaches and have a support system. We certainly want to do our part to do that. Another solution that's out there that is, you know, more privy to ABCA members, but also for guys that are just looking for any kind of help, is Turn 2 for Youth. And what they do in terms of donating equipment and getting stuff out to communities that need equipment, need bats, need gloves, need cleats, catcher's gear, that's a terrific resource for anyone out there reaching out to Billy and Vince and those guys at Turn 2 for Youth. And we hope that you do that. So we've already opened up so much in terms of MLB and NCAA, but more importantly, the ABCA and what we can do. And Spencer, if there's anything left on that bone, man, what more can you see from MLB, from the NCAA, and even here at ABCA that we can continue to do to help?
Yeah, you know, I think there is obviously a big picture, you know, and I think we've kind of hit on those, but I really think we're to the point, and I love hearing some of these things. And you know, I'll be honest, this has even gotten me to you know, I need to step up, you know, and I think if all of us look to get, you know, a couple of percent better in this area, I think we're going to be in a good place. And, you know, one of the things, it seems like a very small thing. I brought up Edwin, but, you know, having a list of all of the minority coaches that are out there, that was, I just received that. And I was like, that's great, you know, because I can't say that I know every coach that is out there. And so, you know, I think just even little things like that are really going to help. But all of us, including and starting with myself, need to, you know, step up in my community. And I think if we're going to see that, I think we're going to be in 10 years, I think we're going to be in a much, much better place. And Sheets, I really appreciate all that you have done, just even getting this podcast and you know, given the opportunity to be on a committee. I'm really thrilled at the direction we're headed.
Sure. Love it, man. Carrick, same question, man. What else do you see that's out there that more of us can get involved and really help?
You know, I think we've covered a lot of things. Yeah. Like I said, I think when you look at it, it because of the financial aspect of it, Major League Baseball definitely can get in there and do some things. And again, I get it with owners and not wanting to split up their profits when it comes to the game. But, you know, one of the privileges I had of working with Boris Corp for 2 years was the amount of information that you were able to be that you have access to.
Yeah.
Is amazing. And so one of the things was 2015, Major League Baseball brought in just over $10 billion in revenue. And when you think about Major League Baseball, when you think about sports and the guys that owns the team that own the teams, I don't think there's any owner in professional baseball that their baseball team is their primary source of income.
Mm-hmm.
So when you really dig into that, and then selfishly, when you start to look and say, okay, how many teams have Dominican academies? And so they're putting resources, and we're putting resources over in the Dominican, which is good to help those kids over there grow in the game. Why aren't we doing that same thing here? Yeah. And what is happening is the idea of saying, well, I don't want to put out money for players that I'm not going to have access to that somebody else may be able to get. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to do some things with the urban youth academies, but I think the idea of being able to infuse more dollars into this thing, which will be a drop in the bucket for them from their profit margin, but will be a huge impact for the communities in which they can serve. If we can get all on that same page and then again, have that plan in place of, hey, this is how these monies are going to be used. And we're going to be accountable for the results. The money's not getting thrown into a black hole. Mm-hmm. If done correctly, it will be used the right way. And you know, kind of like Spence talked about the ACES program, I came in contact with those guys, with Kevin, you know, kind of like when they first started going.
Yeah.
And if that is not the prototypical model of how it should be done with regards to minority kids, I don't know what is. Because the one thing that I knew whenever I went to go recruit any of his kids, they were going to know how to play the game.
Yep.
And they were going to know how to play it the right way. And so being able to take that type of model and move that forward, and what the White Sox have done with funding that thing and making sure that those kids have those opportunities has been tremendous. And so there's kind of there's a playbook, if you will, that's out there. And now moving it forward to the college side of it, starting this committee, I think will be great, and being on it with these two other guys, guys that, like I told you initially, that I have tremendous amount of respect for.
Sure.
And that we all get along really, really good. So it's going to make it even that much better for us to be involved, because we all know we're going to have the common goal in mind.
So awesome. Got a little chill bump right there, Carrick. Appreciate that, man. So,
I do what I can.
So I know there one thing comes out of this, certainly the three guys on this call and the fourth guy that's rocking the mic, we've got to figure out what we need to do personally. And hopefully it charges the four guys on this call to really go out and do that. I think one thing that should come from this, Spencer, is we got to connect with Kenny, either yourself or myself, and see if he can't spearhead and really try to move forward. And we're looking at MLB cities, starting what they have there in Chicago and trying to find the right people. Let's see if we can't get that ball rolling. Certainly from where we all sit, we can do more with coaching clinics. We can do more with youth clinics. I'd love to see all three of you guys host one of our ACE community clinics just as starting places. And then as we move forward and we build this minority relations committee, we want to be better from the ABCA perspective and we want to do more. So cannot be more thankful for you guys and your ideas and your creativity. Now, this is a little off the script, this last question for you, but it's one that we always ask before we end a show. We just want advice, and it could be advice for any coach that's out there listening to this show. What would you offer from where you sit? And Carrick, I want you to kick this one off. But man, you guys have such an absolute diverse resume and portfolio of perspective that I think we'd be remiss if we ended the show and we did not ask. What would you offer coaches out there, Carrick, that are listening?
I think the first thing that I would tell people is don't let your job define you. Don't get yourself in a position where you feel like you've arrived and then all of a sudden you get power drunk and that you feel that, you know, hey, I am somebody now because I've gotten to this level. Even with me, when I was able to get that opportunity to go to Missouri, you know, I was, to my knowledge, I was the first full-time black assistant coach in the 12. And then moving to the SEC, I was the only black assistant coach in the SEC. But I told people that were close to me that I've grown up with my whole life, if at any point you think that I've gotten off track for who I am because of what I'm doing, come up and hit me right in my mouth. And I will understand why you're doing that. And so I think that's the biggest thing is when you're in this thing, that if you ever lose focus of why it is that you're doing it, then you need to quit and go do something else. If the kids that you're involved with become less important and the wins start to become more important, then quit. Yeah. Go do something else. Because once you lose that perspective, you're setting yourself up on a track that is going to eventually run out and you're going to fall off. It may last for a while, but eventually you're going to get yourself in a position where you're going, that train is going to run out of track and you're going to crash. So for me, I always stay grounded and understand that my passion, what I'm doing, comes from the kids that I'm working with. And it just so happened that I was blessed with the ability, again, of being good people like Ravel and Coach Reese and some other guys, to have the ability to do it in baseball. It could have been basketball, could have been golf, it could have been something else, but it is baseball. And I am passionate about baseball, but I'm more passionate about the kids that I'm involved with. And so that would be my piece of advice is never, ever lose focus of why it is that you got into this game. And if you got into this game for the wrong reasons, well, again, that's going to manifest itself at some point and you won't play the game very long.
That's right. Keeping your why at the forefront. I love that. Mervell, same question, man. Advice for coaches that are paying attention to this show. What would you offer those guys?
Well, one of the things that I've learned quickly is don't have a limit on what your job is. If you have to wash uniforms, if you have to drag the field, if you have to water the field, if you have to clean offices, whatever you need to do to be able to show that you don't only lead by your title, but you lead by example. That's one of the things that I have done throughout my whole entire career. There are no limits of what a head coach can do, because a head coach is a role model not only to the players, but also to their coaches. And that's, as we know, coaches, assistant coaches, usually become head coaches, and you want to make sure that the foundation is there for them. Second, you have to make sure that you treat your players as you would treat your own kids. Sometimes you're going to give them tough love. Sometimes you're going to tell them no for their good, but make sure that we don't compromise who we are as parents and change and be someone that we are not when it comes down to baseball. We have to mentor. We don't only have to mentor on the field, but we have to mentor off the field. Someone has done it for us. They are people that have been in our lives that have treated us with respect, mm-hmm. but have told us no when they needed to, and have sent us into the man that we are right now. Third, It's not about us. It's not about the coaches. It's about the players. How do we change lives? How do we take a young man at 18 and make him into a real man at 22? How do we become an extension of their parents so that we can continue to teach him what is good, what's bad, what to stay away from, and what to do more of so that they can become productive. Listen, it is amazing as I hear Tarik Jackson and I play with him and knowing that out of a small school at Bethune Cookman, they are currently three head coaches in Division I baseball, which is, you know, Tarik Jackson, of course, myself, and Jose Vasquez at Alabama State that mm-hmm. plays for me at Bethune. There are three out of that small university. And it all started with Brian Reese, just a mentor that mentored me and Tarik. And now we're doing the same thing with other players as well. And we also, Spence mentioned Edwin Jackson. He came from Howard University as well, which is also in the MEAC. That's when he started playing his baseball. So a lot of good coaches come from those smaller universities, minority universities that are doing quite well. But be yourself. Don't compromise. Do more than what you're asked to do. And at the very end, you'll see good rewards for yourself.
Love it. Spencer, it's meat on the bone there for you, man. What else would you offer these guys paying attention to the show?
Well, you know, I think that both you guys hit on great points. You know, relationships, I think that's the biggest thing. And obviously with players I've been very lucky that this game has taken me, you know, to a lot of different places and probably places I never would go to. But, you know, really just enjoy the relationships with your players, with your coaches, with your, you know, administration. I just think sometimes, again, it's so easy, and Tarik kind of stole mine of not letting the game define you. I tell our players all the time, you know, do not let this game define you. You know, it's what you do. It's not who you are. And that can be tough sometimes, right? As we're judged on wins and losses, gosh, I feel good. I've got the game figured out. Because we're winning. And then as soon as you, as we all have had those tough, you know, years, tough, you know, weeks, whatever it may be, you're down in the dumps. And so, not letting the game define you and enjoying your relationships. And then, you know, and then again, just truly enjoying whether you're going through struggles, whether you're having success, just enjoy the whole process of this game. Cause it is, when you look at it, it's like, hey, we're coaching the game of baseball, you know, and we're trying to teach life lessons through the game of baseball. But at the end, it is a fun game that we have the privilege of coaching. So I think those three things for me, you know, the relationships, making sure that you don't let the game define you, and just enjoying the process are big.
Could have had on a lot of different guys. I mean, Coach Vasquez, Coach Jackson, like we mentioned, Edwin Thompson, EKU, Sergio at Arizona. I talked with Andre Butler last week, assistant at Penn State, just about the things that he's done. And eventually we will have on Hall of Famer Andy Lopez from Arizona. But we landed on you three, and I'm so glad that we did. You guys have certainly lived up to the billing in my mind of what I thought could come from this show. And we know that our loyal listeners that are out there paying attention, they've gained so much perspective. And where we sit, God bless you. We're so thankful that you guys jumped on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We wish all three of you the best of luck moving forward, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Appreciate it, Chief. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, your home for certified audio gold. Huge thanks to our sponsor of the podcast, our great friends over at AstroTurf. And if you've got questions or you're interested in how they can transform your facility, head over to astroturf.com and find out why they have been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. Also, if you're interested in what we're doing here at the American Baseball Coaches Association, check out our website, abca.org, or find us on social media on Facebook and on Twitter at ABCA1945. Please feel free to connect with me directly on social media. That's at Coach Sheets 3, or by email at Sheets, Sheets, at ABCA.org. And we look forward to hearing from each of you very soon. So until next week, coaches, we ask you, keep learning, you keep growing, you keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.